We Can't Keep on on Track When Patrick's Not Here brings you
The Next City.
Welcome to Phoenix City. As you can tell, this is Frosty hosting again. Patrick is off doing, I don't know, having a girlfriend possibly.
No, he's actually doing a show.
Is he?
If he's not here, he's generally doing a show.
Oh, well, I was going to try to give him, you know, mad props for his lady skills, but, you know.
That seems quite incongruous.
Yeah, okay. As you can tell, Cam's here and so is Dave.
Hello, hello.
Welcome, lads. It's the big time. It's the preview.
Yeah, only 11 days to go. Is it 11 days to go today? Or
11 or 12 or something. Yeah, just double digits. Yeah. So we're almost into it. Already the shit rumours are flying about who's going to be starting, but we'll get to that in a bit.
Because that was
and
us
who we're
going to
have in our squad.
Yeah. There might be a bit of shit signing as well, but here we go. The Knicks.
So we've got quite a long list of outs. At a club.
Not enough ins.
Do you want to run through them all?
Please do.
So Lewitsch, Rogerson, Keegan Smith was sent out to Lower Hutt, I'm assuming with the proviso of coming back in again. I haven't seen that actually happen, but I'm pretty sure he's still training with the squad and I've seen him at some preseason things.
So. He'd still be well in the mix for the Weenix anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. Paratsky, Italiano, McGarry, Galloway, McGlinchey, Redenton, Balafi, Rossi, Kaladurdovich, and Parkhouse have all gone from the squad.
But of that list, how many are we actually disappointed to see going?
Well,
Balafi and Redenton, for sure.
It depends what proviso you're going on. If you look at starters, that's a hell of a lot of starters.
It's a lot of starters, but how many of them would we...
How many starters have we signed in?
Yeah, that's a good point.
You know, that list,
everybody
seven or eight starters potentially.
Everybody that's come into the club fresh is a starter, in my opinion, or is definitely fighting for a starter.
Yeah, but let's say it's seven. Yeah. Maybe eight starters we've lost, and we've brought in, what, four, five players?
Five.
So you still lost three starters.
Yeah, for me, a lot of those starting players, they weren't any better than the guys
we
had.
No, but
we
haven't replaced them with anyone, or certainly anyone better, right? And I think we all agree lots of them weren't necessarily up to scratch last year. I think Lewitsch came in, and he showed some decent football, but I don't think he was the starter we wanted.
But
we haven't replaced him with someone of similar quality.
No. Well... I think we've improved that spot. I think Singh takes that spot.
We already had Singh, though.
Yeah, but...
You know, we're moving him up, but in terms of what we're actually bringing back into the squad, this is clearly, for me, a net negative.
No, I think Nichols. I would rather have Nichols.
As a whole squad, though. Not man for man, but as a squad, this is clearly
yeah,
a negative.
Yeah, we need another four signings just to be legal.
And to get back to this level, they'd all have to be starters.
Yeah. So honestly, I look at who we've lost.
Anything less than that, we're down on.
If you're doing starters must be starters sort of thing, but if I look at it as an overall squad, I still think if we bring in quality youngsters, I think the squad is easily on par to what it was last year. I don't think it's a negative.
I think of all those guys that left, I would have liked to have kept Kaladurovic because I still reckon he's good for 9 to 10 goals in the season and we need a number 9.
He's a role we don't have.
He's a role we don't have, yep. Marco Rossi, who cared.
Yep.
But he didn't.
But no. Who cares?
I think you can argue you swapped him like for like-ish.
But I would like to have them both.
Yeah, it'd be great if we could.
Stephen Taylor is an upgrade on Marco Rossi. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah.
Stephen Taylor is
But you've only got limited import slots there. It's hard to justify spending two. We've upgraded that one. Yeah. I think that's fair.
So I'd have kept him and Redenton. Without doubt, I'd have kept Matt Redenton.
Redenton I would have kept. Falafi I would have kept. I don't think Kaladurovic gives you anything that you need because he can't play back to goal and he didn't have the wheels to run the pointy end. That he was had a fantastic fucking head.
Goals, and he would have bought us 9 to 10 goals this season.
I don't think he would have. I think he would have got us 6, and I don't think we need 6. We either need double figures to take the pressure off Burns and Krishna, or we need a guy that can drag players and allow them to score. And I don't think he did either role.
Looking at the squad that we actually have now, I'll go through who we've brought in, basically. So I brought in Michael Kopczynski, known as Copper, from Legia Warsaw. He is on loan currently. We brought in Stephen Taylor from Peterborough United. We brought in Philip Curto from Rota JC, and both unattached, David Williams and Mitch Nichols.
So
all of those guys are starting quality players, which is great.
And so we know basically what we're going to get out of Williams and Nichols. I mean, Butters and Williams are going to be fairly consistent. They're going to Williams is going to score you the odd goal off the bench.
Yeah, Nichols he's the only one I disagree with. I don't know that he's a starter. He could be, but he needs to find some serious form. Pretty much everywhere he's been a bench player.
I remember, I'm pretty sure he started for Hart.
He was at Hart, he was at Fury. That Fury is the last time I remember him being a consistent starter. I think he has started some games, but I don't think, I think he was starting through injuries. Pretty much everywhere since Fury, he's been a bench player, and he's a good bench player. He's a great squaddy to have, but I don't think he's your starting striker. He's not that role. Yes.
I think he's a wide player anyway, in which case he's sitting behind Burns and Krishna. Sorry.
So he started regularly for Hart and did start regularly for Fury.
But he wasn't scoring goals for Hart when he was there.
He's got a hat-trick against us here.
Yeah, but everyone can do that. You could do that, Cam. But no,
what? Have you seen me play?
No.
I haven't. But, he wasn't a Ross McCormick-like striker. He wasn't the striker setting the league like. He's
absolutely not. And I don't think he is going to start for us. I think he'll be behind Krishna and Burns in that position.
And when he chimes in, he's a good option to have there. He basically is replacing Hamish Watson. I think he's an upgrade there.
Oh, definitely an upgrade on Hamish,
Yeah, if you're talking man for man, name check, then definitely. But the problem,
he's our attacking player who's going to come off the bench, which is what Watto was obsessively doing.
I unfortunately for me, he just doesn't fill that gap at nine. And that's
he is the same mold as both Krishna and Burns, really. So it's just a different name.
He's gas and he can hit the ball,
Which isn't necessarily bad. I mean, clearly we're putting quite a few eggs in that basket, though, which could go really well. It could not, because you look at that strike force, and we've got a lot of similar players there. I mean, Nichols and Singh, again, you can say they're reasonably similar in terms of how they play. It's not necessarily bad that we have those similar players, but it means we don't, say, have a traditional number nine who's going to be back to goal or, any of that sort of stuff. You are relying on guys to run at players and use their pace.
So we should probably go through we think that Mark Radan is actually going to do as far as a formation goes.
And that's a signing that's worth it that we haven't mentioned.
Oh, Radan?
Yes. I'm happy.
I like the way he talks.
Yeah, absolutely.
He has hit that siege mentality thing that I've been banging on about for I don't know how long, pointing back to Ricky all the time. That really, really irked me something. But
I'm 100% happy with that signing. I think he's the manager I wanted to come in some time ago. I'm glad we've got him. I can't wait to see what he can put out on the pitch. And I'm prepared to give him some time.
Yeah.
I really am prepared to give him some time to get his ideas across, because he has been successful at the lower level. This is the step that his success deserves that opportunity. So let's give it to him, see what happens. It's really exciting.
I think his philosophy kind of suits. He is a defensively minded coach, and he is very much a mental toughness kind of guy. And I think that is the sort of coach that we need as far as a psychology goes. I think that suits what we've got here as far as a club goes. So he's playing a 5-3-2. I'm not sure if this is a kind of chosen formation, but it certainly suits our back five players. I think that though, when you say 5-3-2, those five basically pick themselves.
So
fair?
Yeah, I agree. 5-3-2 defense, 3-5-2 in attack. So
is it?
Yes.
Is it with Doyle and Kikache?
Yes, they'll be going. Well, it's not Doyle and Kikache because neither of them can play on the right.
Sorry, Fenton. Sorry.
Yeah, so Fenton is a midfielder who's filling in on the right-hand side.
Yeah.
And Doyle is a left-back who's going up and down.
I thought Doyle was going to be left-centre.
Kikache will go out.
That was my understanding, was that it was Doyle, left-centre, and Kikache.
But they're interchangeable. Either of them could do the job. Kikache is probably going to go further forward because he's less experienced. He doesn't have the same bulk and size and experience that
he's got
Doyle
much
has.
Better skills, I think, for mine.
And Doyle is solid at centre back. We've seen that happen, so it's quite cool. I think what will actually happen is if Fox will end up starting in at centre, probably centre right, and Taylor will move to centre left, and then Doyle will go up and down the wing. Yep. And I think that's a more solid option than Kikacho is a good player, there's no doubt. Doyle is much better defensively, and he can still go up and down the line and put the ball in. So I think if Fox is fit, he starts, Doyle goes out on the left.
Yeah, I think that that's probably fair. My only proviso on that would be handling that the left-footed cover and behind Kikacho / Doyle going up high. I think that that's a problem because I know that we've struggled with that in the past. We know that Fox and Durante can't do that job well.
No, yeah. This is why I think Taylor flits in.
Yeah, it has
Fox
to be Taylor
be on the right. Durante will be in the middle.
Yeah,
so that's why Taylor shifts.
Yeah, I'm reserving judgment to see if Taylor can actually handle that left side cover.
Yep, so that right wing slot in the right fullback, whatever you want to call it, is still an issue.
Yeah.
Fenton will do a job. There is no argument. He will do everything you ask of him, and he is a good footballer. He's not a right back, and it's been a long time since he played right back.
No, I don't think he's a right back, but a right wing back, I think that, because, I mean, with three guys inside him, it does mean that you have to cover a lot narrower corridor, and I think that makes it a lot easier for someone like him, especially, who is slight and not totally defensively minded. But we know that, you know, Ernie had him running up and down. So long as his shoulders can stay attached to him, I don't think that that's a bad option, because with the five at the back, we do need those two wingbacks. We do need those fullbacks getting forward, getting high and getting on the ball, and we know that Fenton can do that well.
They will be doing a lot of running.
Oh, yeah. He's going to be absolutely pantsed every game, just knackered.
Yeah.
But see, this is from where we've got issues is that we're going to have to play very aggressively with our fullbacks. We don't have cover on the bench for them. Fullbacks tend to burn out real quickly during a game because they're having to do those miles and they're having to do them at full sprint. We have no one on the bench that can cover.
Oh, and even if you assume an injury, for example,
there's no
depth for those two positions, really.
I mean, the guys that we would have had.
Arguably, it's makeshift to begin with Fenton, but I think he can do the job, but you're very quickly into makeshift after that.
It basically becomes Rufa because, I mean, we've lost guys like McGarry and who could have filled in there, and Gully.
Well, we didn't sign Gully.
Yeah, I know, but those are the sorts of guys we've had through the academy that you would have hoped would kick on and get into
the interesting
spot.
Question I was going to ask, do we think Fenton does a better job there than Gully would have? I think Tratt was clearly an option, and it doesn't sound like that's happening. It certainly hasn't happened yet. But if we like-for-like compare Fence against Gully, I would take Gully.
Yes,
Gully's showing he suits that role, exactly what we're asking of him. He gets up, he gets back, but he's also defensive-minded.
Yep.
I mean, I think Fenton does the job of getting forward really well. I think he can put in a decent cross. I think there's a lot of good there, but he worries me defensively, whereas Gully doesn't at all. He talks and he gets back and he's just committed to the defence as much as he is the attack.
Yep.
And I'd be feeling much more confident if he was there, but we haven't signed him for whatever reason. So
yep. No, I mean, for me, it depends on how new age Rudan is going with his fullbacks. Because, I mean, your more modern fullback isn't just getting forward and bombing crosses into the box. He's getting in and cutting in as well.
Yeah.
And Fenton's more of that mold. So if he's given the license to do that a little more, you know, for to cut in while Krishna drifts out and holds the fullback up and get in between them, then I think it starts becoming, you know, that could be a real positive for us if we can get the ball.
See, I think the Gully offers that, but it's hard to know whether he offers that at A-League level because we haven't seen him at that level. But I would argue at the National League level, he does precisely that and he does it very well.
Yeah, yeah. That's for me the issue.
It's obviously a different quality of defender. It's a different league. So whether or not he can bring that same strength, because I think he does a great job of crossing a ball, but he's not afraid to run at players and beat them and get inside and all that stuff.
Yeah, I think that's why Fenton really gets the nod, is pretty much we've seen him play that attacking role.
We've seen him do it how long ago now?
You know, yeah,
it hasn't
I know.
Been recent. That's the other concern there, is he up to snuff these days? Hopefully. I mean, it's very sad to see how the injuries have affected him, because he was clearly on a trajectory to being a really good A-League player, but he's been out for a long time. He's been playing some football, but again, not at this level.
Yeah, for me, I mean, we've seen that Rudan's quite a cautious guy as far as his signings go, and he's been, you know, you look at the length of time he's been trialling Tratt, who was a guy that showed that he could easily play at this level. The fact that he's done the same thing with Fenton and still kind of, you know, he would have had the option of getting rid of Fenton if he wanted to, even though he had a contract signed. We got rid of a few guys. Like, I mean, Parkhouse, I think, had one.
Parkhouse was signed for this season.
Yeah, and he was just shown the door. So I'm going to hope that Rudan has kind of seen enough to go, yeah, actually, he's back to where he was, and that's good enough. So we kind of push forward a little bit, and we've into Mr. Kopczynski, who hasn't impressed a lot of our colleagues. I thought he was okay. His reading of play is good, but it's whether he's got the ability to break forward and transition quickly for mine. Because, I mean, the way we're playing with 5-3-2, we have to be able to break and transition quickly and just get the ball out or up. Mm. And so the pass of that defensive midfield, it really starts becoming interesting.
Yeah, it's quite interesting. It's an area where we definitely need him to fire, and we spent an import slot there for a reason. It doesn't seem to have worked so far.
No, and I'm worried about it.
Yeah, that's fair.
And we used an import slot there last season. We had Paratski. At this point, I would stick with Paratski. His concerns were known quantities. You know, he drifted in and out of games, but when he was in the game, he was right in it. And I think if you've got a squad performing well around him, he'll stay in the game much more. Whereas Kopczynski just worries me. We see flashes of maybe he's got it, but we see a lot of concerning moments where it just seems like technically he might not be up to it. He's not quick enough in transition. The ball isn't accurate enough, you know, all that kind of stuff, that it might be rust or it might just be he's not up to it.
I give him rust for Bentley Greens.
Yeah.
And I give him tiredness from that 10-day camp.
Yeah.
Now.
Yeah, now it's hard to keep making those arguments, and I have the same concerns still. Whereas, like I say, at least with Paratski, we knew the skill was there. He just didn't always access it. You know, there was clearly some stuff, whether it just be mental preparation or whatever it was, but some stuff that was, you know, holding him back from performing at that level all the time. But we saw flashes of it. I haven't seen enough of that from Kopczynski yet. I'm worried.
Yeah.
Hopefully it's up to it. Hopefully they've seen the right things there, but I haven't.
See, for me, what is concerning is that he hasn't shown that he is of a level higher than his replacement, which is Alex Rufer. Yep. And that is a concern for me because I do not think Alex Rufer is a defensive midfielder at all.
He's not. He's a box-to-box midfielder. He's definitely not a defensive midfielder.
Yeah, so I think that if Kopczynski doesn't fire, we're in a world of pain because our replacement is Rufer, who's not a defensive midfielder, as you say, and we have no one else.
Yeah.
We quickly signed Riera. He just got a citizenship.
Yeah, I did see that. Although I think maybe he's a couple of years late.
Yeah, indeed.
Yeah. And he's a lot slower. he's definitely not the player
he is. He certainly knows how to slow a game down, I reckon. His game management might be quite solid, but there might be a couple of sit downs.
Tim and Jura can have some chats about that through the centre of defence there.
Yeah.
Okay, so pushing on.
You know what? Put them together. Put them together, Kopczynski and Riera in there, and we are solid. We are gold.
I'll be honest with you. I mean, I was hoping that we were going to play two in front of the – well, I was thinking it probably would have been a back four, but two.
Yeah, but
I think once you've gone to a five, putting two in front of them
– you just can't.
You've now got – you know, you're setting up a wall back there constantly.
If it was a 3-4-3 or 3-4-1-2 or something like that, I could understand using two of those positions, but we are looking –
we're a five
we're
at the back.
Looking
we're
pretty not offensive a, at the moment.
Yeah, we're a five at the back. We're not playing three at the back. That's why we just – it's not an option. But, yeah, Kopczynski looks like the kind of guy to me that needs a ball-playing playmaker beside him. He's a defender. He just kind of sits in behind and he can play those short passes. But if you ask him to run a game, I don't think that's him.
Well, and hopefully he's got those two guys in front of him. I mean, you've got Singh and Nichols, who ideally are sitting in front of him. Both of those guys can run a game. You know, if he can get that short ball into them and they can run it from there, this could work. But
for me, it relies on Nichols, not Singh.
Well,
To link those guys up. I think Singh's going to drift higher and it's up to Nichols to kind of drift around and Singh pick up the ball up.
Yeah. Singh is going to be a 10 and Nichols will be box to box.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My gut feels here is you're going to have those two switching between those roles. Both of them can play both roles.
Oh, definitely.
So I think you'll see a lot of interchange there. Yeah. It's like when you've got wingers who can play both wings, you mix it up. I won't be surprised if Singh is largely the 10, but if he drops back in to receive a ball, Nichols is more than capable to sit up in that 10 role.
You'll just see that
switching around reasonably fluidly.
I think it will switch around less purely because defensively Nichols will be better. He's bigger, he's stronger, and more experienced, I think.
Have you watched him try and tackle, though?
Oh, he put in a beauty on Honda in that win over the victory.
Well, it came off nicely.
Yeah.
Oh, he read it beautifully.
Technique in terms of tackling isn't his strong suit, but neither is it Singh's.
I'm pretty sure that was a solid left knee tackle. it was delightful.
It was.
The way he ran straight into the ball and just managed to lump it out of him.
Yeah. Yep.
We'll take it. I'll take anyone.
Okay, so it seems like we're reasonably happy with the centre midfield from our 8 and 10 with Singh and Nichols. I don't know that we've got any depth in there.
No, I think we need another signing in there. We definitely need another quality signing in there to create not just depth but competition, because those guys might be starting now. As soon as we get an injury, obviously we're screwed, but they also may get complacent because there's no one there to take it away from them.
Yeah, for me, it's not even just if there's an injury. I mean, centre midfield, you know, they're going to be covering 10Ks. Their legs will tire. We can't play them 90 minutes every game. I don't even think we can play them 90 minutes any game. I mean, Singh, yeah, he's young, and maybe if he's playing a lot of 10, he won't need to cover that much distance. But that means it's going to be on Nichols to do all the running and, you know, we can't expect him to be doing all that much.
No, which means, I mean, who are you even bringing on there?
It's Roofer.
Yeah.
It is Roofer. And that's why I'm hoping that with the fact that we still need 4 signings minimum in the next week, that at least one of them is going to be in that space.
But again, are we going to get a quality guy in that time frame? To me, I don't think we are.
Yeah, it's hard to judge, really. I would hope we have. We've been doing a lot of work in the background. We've been doing a lot of contacts. There's a lot of chats going on. Obviously, nothing's gone over the line, but I'm hoping something will move.
I
think there's a couple of players in that mold, but they're also the same players who have been rumoured to have turned down trials. So, I mean, that's got to be a worry, right?
Basically, even if we sign them right now, they aren't playing that first game.
No,
they're not playing the first four games.
We have a sub in that position. I think Roofer can do a job in there, right? Like I think the worry is if we have an injury and Roofer's suddenly the starter in there, things are a big concern. But I think if we're going, once they get a bit tired, can we bring someone on for 20 minutes? I think we have that covered reasonably well. And we should be able to get through the first little part of the season like that. If you were to sign someone today, I think we could have them up to speed in time for when you need them. But I just don't think the players who are the quality to step into the A-League are the ones receptive to being signed at this point. I mean,
no.
I will be very happy to be proven wrong, but the names I hear around the traps of the people turning down those trials are the same names I'd be throwing out as fitting in that position. So,
and we had the option and they had the option to sign on a long time ago. So if it hasn't happened, it ain't happening.
Who knows what the reasons are behind the scenes? Maybe those rumors are not true at all. Maybe they are, in fact, in negotiations right now. Yeah, but I'll believe it when I see it.
So moving on to, we've already spoken about cover for the front third at the pointy end, Mr. Williams. I think that's probably our strongest bench player. Williams, I can't think of anyone that really jumps out beyond.
No, I think you're pretty much right there, mate.
And then he's covering for Burns and Krishna. So we're playing obviously two wide attackers, but two guys for me that are streaky.
I think my big problem here is you've said he's covering for Burns and Krishna, but I think we know one of those players can play 90 minutes every week and one of them clearly can't. So I think he's covering for Burns. Burns doesn't have the engine he used to, whereas Krishna does. Krishna can play 90 minutes, but asking him to do it every single week is a tough ask.
Yeah.
I think that's, you know, let's hope his fitness is up to it.
Especially, you know, potentially he'll be also playing at the international windows as well.
Yeah.
Because, it's one of those situations where Burns can play 90, but he's not a 90-minute player. He'd be doing it because Krishna's gone off injured and he's struggling through, which that feels like it's going to be tough. It puts a lot of pressure on Krishna, and he struggled under pressure at points last season. So let's hope it starts well and that they're both gelling and, you know, they're taking the pressure off themselves by getting early goals, and, you know, that makes it all a bit easier.
Yeah, that for me is the issue, is that Burns – is the streaky player. And so if he doesn't get anything, goes on Krishna, and Krishna won't, he doesn't, hasn't yet shown the ability to thrive under pressure. And so we're almost in this double lose scenario, or it'll go the other way. Burns is starting to draw a lot of attention or scoring goals or whatever, and Christian's going to get a bit more space and time, in which case we start seeing, you know, probably a net doubling effect. But, you know, it is what it is. I mean, if we're going to be playing two wide strikers, I can't think of two guys that just jump out at me and say, yeah, I'd rather have these. Oh, probably Vidicic is one of them ahead of Burns.
Yep.
You know, and obviously the as far as locals go, I think that, you know, Burns has the capacity to light up the league. We know that.
Yep,
and it's really only Vidicic that is a local that's probably on par with that. Mm. Maybe Kamau's local as well.
Yeah, he's Australian too. Yep.
And, you know, obviously Krishna is technically still a visa player, but sounds like any minute now he might just be getting a, you know,
fingers crossed.
Yeah, passport, and therefore opening up a nice visa spot for us. The one, so I mean, is there anything
which feels like a bit of a saving grace? If we can get another visa spot, it makes life a lot easier for us.
Assuming we can actually fill it.
Yeah. Our problem is that we don't seem to be able to get the locals in that we need. Whereas opening it up to we can suddenly have anyone in the world, that makes it a little easier on recruitment.
Right? Sure does.
Anything else for the pointy end before we roll all the way back to talk to
Is there anyone in the squad that we haven't really talked about? Because there must be a few names on there, like Lowry, for example, we haven't mentioned.
Yeah. So, yeah. You
know, who else is in the squad currently? Because obviously we're four players short. We know we need to fill those gaps. In the next must only be 4 or 5 days we have to fill those gaps.
So in the conversation that we've just had, there are two players in our squad we haven't mentioned.
Okay, yep.
And they are Lowry and Sale.
Okay.
And obviously Kurto, because he'll be the starting keeper. Yep. So, those would be the only ones we haven't shaded. About it all.
So,
how do we feel about an import slot on the keeper? That might, you know, we could do with that import slot right now, right? Do we think maybe sticking with?
We still have an import slot. We've still got an import slot we haven't used, so we don't need his.
Yeah, for mine, I don't mind the idea of using an import slot. Especially if Krishna was considered a local, then it starts becoming, you know, really beneficial. But if you, I don't mind having a quality player. That's all it comes down to.
Yeah.
And if he is going to pull off a save that no one else in the A-League is going to do, and he's going to do that once every game or every second game, like, you know, like a striker would do to score you one every game or every second game, I think that has, you know, we can start putting an equivalence on, you know, visa strikers to visa keepers. I don't know that that's a realistic possibility, that someone's going to pull off a worldy save. But if he can justify that, then champion. But again, we haven't used all our visa spots.
No, but so it's a thing we've talked about on the pod before of, to be competitive in this league, you need probably minimum two, if not three, of your imports as essentially game changers. They need to be starters who are performing.
Yeah.
So I don't mind if you're spending one of the others on a goalkeeper, but do we think we have those two imports or three ideally who are going to fire?
I think we have two. And Stephen Taylor and Roy Krishna.
Roy Krishna, yeah. And we've had Krishna for a while, which is why I kind of, in some ways, discount him from the conversation, if you know what I mean. Because he's a known quantity, and I agree, he's definitely the quality we need, but he's basically a local. He's not that Honda level import, right?
No,
like,
true.
You know, and we kind of need two of those. I think Taylor, sure, that's one. I think we'll all agree with that, but I'm not convinced we've got another one or two, and I don't think at this late stage in the game we're suddenly signing them either. Mm-hmm. So that worries me, that we know that the use of those import slots is what defines the winning teams in this league. It has been for some time now, and I think we're looking below par on that by some margin.
We definitely have good locals. We've built the Nichols and the Williams and the Burns. We have good Aussie Kiwi players. Hopefully we do grab another two when Krishna becomes a local.
Well, if Krishna does, I mean, you'd almost put our locals up against anyone else's locals.
I would. I think that's absolutely true, and I think that's probably been true for a little while now that we've
Perth. I think Perth have probably got the strongest local squad in the A-League. The other squads that I'd have ahead of them have better imports.
Yeah.
I think that's basically the difference.
So let's kind of just wrap up by going, we've obviously got four signings that we need to make.
One of them, an import, probably.
Yeah, well, certainly an option. But just without kind of working out names or options of where we want to do the big signings, if we do use a visa spot, where do we think that we need to sign, and where do we think we need to sign a starter as opposed to a bench player?
Three starters, nine, midfield, right back.
See, I, as much as I'd want to sign a nine, I don't think we can.
Have sailed.
Yeah, I think we're a 5-3-2.
Yeah. No longer, but it's clear at this point that that's not what we're getting.
Still need that backup option. Still need that plan B. We don't have that.
Yeah, for me, I think if we can get a nine, then we've got a plan B. So therefore, it's not necessarily a visa; it's a bench player.
Yeah.
You know, it's so going to a 4-3-3 or something like that to really put the cat amongst the pigeons and getting three guys up high.
No, we just need to apply to the FFA to have more visa spots.
Good luck with that.
Yeah, the FFA are probably not all that happy with us.
That is fair.
I think a nine would be good, but I think with the formation we're playing, I don't know that it's wholly necessary. Certainly within the four we're going to sign. That we have to sign. You know, obviously we can sign, another three?
Three, yeah, we can have
seven more. We can get seven more.
Yeah, so within the four, I would have that number nine option as your five because I think it's too late in the day. For next season, hell yeah, he'd be my first one to be signing. So where do we think that we need cover? I mean, for me, central midfield.
Yeah.
We need at least one, if not two.
And right back.
Right back?
Yep. So because we have literally no one, we're playing a midfielder at right back, so we have no one starting and no depth.
Yeah, if I was signing a starter, I'd be signing them at right back.
Yep.
But right back, depth, starter, something. We need someone there.
Yep.
I think we need some cover for that holding midfield as well, whatever that looks like. I mean, you can argue maybe it's a starter we need to sign there. I don't know. We'll see what happens with what we've got there. I think you're right. We need some cover for Singh and Nichols that is not just Roofer. And then, I mean, your last of the four, you've got some options. You could look to use it up front for some cover there. You could look, you know, you've got Libby, Doyle and some options at left back, but maybe you want some better cover in the middle there. You've got Lowry, you fit somewhere in that mix, but I don't know what Rudan's thinking there. Yeah. But maybe you do want another defensive cover, or maybe you spend it again on a second cover for that number 18 role.
See, for mine, it's not being spent on our back because we do have Lowry and Fox there. And I think that's us nailed down unless we go for a more specialist right back.
Well, but if you have one of those centre backs injured, we're very thin after that.
Well,
you bring in a starter and then we don't have a bench for it, right? That's the only reason.
No, I think you bring Fox in and then you've still got Lowry on the bench. So I'm the jury's still out for Lowry on his ability to step up for mine at the moment. But he keeps getting signed and, you know, he's there now. And I think if you bring in another player to fill his spot, it's kind of like, well, you may as well have gotten rid of him in the first place.
Yeah.
So I think we've attached ourselves to that cart horse, should we say. So one or two in the centre, a right fullback, possibly
another forward. Yep.
Another forward.
So we go right fullback, a defensive midfielder, an attacking midfielder, and a striker of some description.
Yeah, see, for me, I put that striker at a fifth, and I'd be like two central midfielders,
a defensive midfielder. Striker, a wide winger.
Who are your four, Frosty?
Yeah.
Tell me these four that you've got a lot of people at fifth.
Yeah.
No, it's the striker at fifth. It's the my four would be it would effectively be three midfielders and a right back. The midfielders would have to be able to cover defensive midfield and box-to-box midfield, I think.
So three of them or two of them?
Three midfielders.
And one right back.
And one right back.
Fair enough. You're entitled to your opinion.
Well, I don't
disagree with that. I think one of those four, you're doubling up cover. I think we all agree. Other than right back, which we're all in agreement on, where we have no cover, you've got Lowry Fox covering defence, theoretically. You don't have cover other than Roofer for the holding, so I think we all agree we need something there. Roofer is also covering the centre mid, so that's a problem, so you need one there.
And he's also covering...
Then you've got Williams covering up front ostensibly. So somewhere you're now doubling up after those first two.
Yeah.
And it's a matter of where you think we most need to double up.
Yeah, for me, it's just the legs from midfield because they're just going to have to be charging.
I think that's probably a smart call, which is why I'd have one in there. But I think because we're playing five at the back there, the depth we have there and the potential for injuries, I'd rather have more cover for those five players. And, you know, you can shuffle some of them, but I would rather have a utility in there than an additional cover for, say, striker.
Maybe you're Bill Tuilomo can play defensive midfield and centre back.
That's a great shout, but he'll find someone like that.
Yeah,
he's going to be a starting MLS player in the not too distant future.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Adelaide. So Cam's going to do most of this stuff, so be prepared.
He's a dedicated researcher.
Yeah, so Adelaide has had a five ins. The most notable for us would be Scott Galloway, who played here last season.
Sorry, guys.
I'm not sure entirely that he would be an upgrade after seeing him play here last season, but maybe it was a space they need filling. And
well, and he has been good in the league before. You've got to wonder how much of his performance that we saw may have been down to the coaching issues we saw affect a lot of players' performance. And when we saw quite a few people performing below what we expect and have seen in the past, maybe he will come right there.
Yeah, you're right. It may do. Outs is quite interesting, though. They've lost Ben Garuccio. I don't think I pronounced that correctly, but he's gone to Heart of Midlothian, so Hearts in the Scottish SPL. So probably a sideways move, I think, unless you go to the very top teams in Scotland. But Hearts were top of the table up to last weekend, so decent.
And a decent shop window to be in.
So. Absolutely. Yeah, Absalonsen has also gone back to Norway, but I think the key there would be Tarek Auric. Has actually gone to Western Sydney.
Ooh.
So he's gone
back again.
Yeah. That, however, they've looked really solid in preseason. They've lost once, which was to Melbourne City, and they have made the final of the FFA Cup as well. Although the only A-League opposition they faced in that run to the final was Central Coast Mariners.
Right. Okay, so anyone in, though, of note?
So the names I've got, Scott Galloway, obviously, Michael Jakobsen from Melbourne City, Craig Goodwin, Ken Ilso, and Ben Halloran. So
known quantities for the most part.
Yeah, Ilso, I'm not even sure I'm pronouncing that right. He's from overseas,
yeah.
But the other two were unattached, so perhaps having been released and signed after.
Yeah, but the other four, I think, I mean, we've all seen over multiple seasons.
They're all, you know.
Squatties.
Yeah. Solid-ish A-League performers in theory.
Yeah, but
so,
I mean,
they haven't gone out and spent large. They haven't bought any big names in there. They're looking like a reasonably traditional Adelaide side, really. I mean, they've never been a team of big hitters, and this is the same this season. Yeah.
So it'd be fair to say that this is a consolidation season for them, and it's a solid, even result. Of solid net zero.
They still have the same core, effectively, that they had last season, and they performed very well last season, obviously. So I think, and having got to the FFA Cup final, says to me they've hit their straps early and they're playing quite well as a solid unit. So if you keep that consistency, that is always going
to
help.
I think you'd have to say, looking at it, they're comfortably a top six contender, but they're probably not a top one or two on paper.
I think that's pretty accurate, actually.
Yeah, I'm thinking they're a five or six, maybe a four, if they can get some consistency where their other teams don't.
Yeah, that's probably a fairly accurate way to describe them, to be honest.
So into the bees, I guess. We're going to mighty Bris Vegas, home of the Buckeries.
Is it their home? Have they ever been there?
Did they even turn up ever? Yeah.
Well, home of the Buckeries, I was about to say money, but that's not true either.
Yeah, I think Brisbane look like they may struggle this season. So they've let go Corey Gamero, Corey Brown, even Franjic, Fahid Ben Kalfalah, he retired. Oxborough, Macaroni, and Jade North. So there's a lot of experience that's gone out of that team. I mean,
and a lot out of the back line too. Yeah, Brown, North. Who's the other one?
I don't even know where Oxborough played, to be honest. But to be fair, they're all older players. They have North, but North, Macaroni, and Ben Kalfalah were all like in the wrong.
But you could say that about anyone in the Brisbane squad last year.
Yeah.
They were all on the far side of 30.
Yeah. So perhaps that's maybe what they're looking at doing. They bought in Adam Taggart and Stefan Mork are the two names that really stand out for me that I recognize.
That's decent.
Yeah. The other names I bought in are Stefan Negro. I don't know him. He was at Melbourne Victory last season.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But part.
Yeah. Fair. Alex Lopez, who was unattached, so I don't know the guy. And Tobias Mikkelsen, who's come from Norway.
Okay.
He had played for the Norwegian – no, sorry, Denmark. He's Danish, but he's been playing in Norway. He had played for the Danish top team. Danish international team, but not for the last 6 years or something like that.
So, okay, yeah. So I'm assuming he's at least into his mid-20s, if not 30s.
You would expect so. So again, with them, they haven't looked fantastic in pre-season. They've only had one loss, which was in the FFA Cup to Melbourne City, but they've drawn with Sydney and Victory and City and the Australian under-20s.
They beat us early on.
Yeah, very, very early on. And the other ones are all against local teams, basically. So,
yeah,
so it's hard to pick, but I think they may struggle this season. I don't see them as a top six contender.
Yeah, it seems to me that it feels like that's a kind of – if Adelaide's your kind of benchmark, no pluses, no minuses, this is definitely in the minus territory for them. They might have got a lot of younger legs, but it doesn't feel like they've got – like Macaroni, as much as he was getting on, he did add a lot of skill and a lot of nous up to their pointy end. And I guess that's what Taggart's there for.
Yeah,
yeah, he's a good signing. He's got goals, and he's probably left – Perth purely because of what's come into Perth.
You mean everyone?
Yeah.
I think almost any A-League squad would be happy to have him on board.
Yeah.
I think you look at their, you know, there were jokes last season about them essentially running a retirement village of a team, and they've got rid of some of that age and bought in some younger players, and that import Mikkelsen sounds like he's probably A-League quality import, not necessarily, you know, league-changing import, but, you know, decent enough, and you'd have to say it's probably an improvement for them, but with less experience.
Much less experience.
Whether that'll pay off, it's hard to say, but you'd have to say younger legs, probably some better talent in there. Hopefully it'll see them do slightly better, but you'd have to say this doesn't look like a top one or two team. It looks like a six would be their goal.
But then
no guarantee of making a six.
Yeah, to be honest, I think their squad is looking about as strong as ours. And I kind of put
them
around the same kind of strength. We've still got spots to fill, though, so we can definitely improve.
No, I mean, if we're going to jump to that, I would agree. I think we're probably in a similar position of targeting a six, but not looking like we're guaranteed to make it, whereas I think Adelaide are that step beyond. I think you'd expect them to be in the six.
Yeah, they're
for them to drop out of it would be a slight surprise.
Okay, so I guess we move on to, sorry, I couldn't help myself, to the mighty Mariners and their mighty signings of
pretty much everybody.
No one of football note.
Well, in Australian football, yes, they've bought in, like, they've basically built an entirely new team. Yeah. So you go through the names. They've got Tommy Orr, Jack Clisby, Corey Gamero, Matt Simon, Michael McGlinchey. These guys who have a lot of experience.
And there's a few names that are coming back to Mariners as well. They would have played
Matt
together.
Matt Simon and McGlinchey were both Mariners players, and they both signed at the same time. So there's other names there too. But I think the key for them is they've brought back two players on loan. So Aidan O'Neill, who is a young Australian, has been playing over at Burnley, and they brought him back on loan. And Ross McCormack, obviously back on loan from Aston Villa. And I think he scored, was it 14 last season for Melbourne City and played about 4 months? So if they can get him firing and keep him for the entire season, I genuinely think their season hinges on him being the guy that gets their goals.
But surely he's competing directly against Usain Bolt.
Yeah, which is why their whole season is key around him scoring goals. I mean, obviously Usain Bolt is the story that's coming out of Mariners in the off-season. It's a...
Including rumours of him starting the first game as well.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. I mean, he hasn't been signed yet. Like, he's not on contract yet. He's on a trial still.
I will guarantee his
signature. Are trialists allowed to play an A-League game?
I think you have to be registered.
To play. I would assume they have to at least sign him as a guest player, if not a fully registered squad member, in order to do that. And so they've only got a few days left to do that.
Yeah. So I find it, interesting. It is such a sideshow, the whole Bolt thing. I've got no problems with the guy trying to make it as a footballer, if that's what he wants to do, and if he's got the ability. He's obviously, got some assets which are going to be very, very useful in playing football. But it's just it's detracting from the football, from everything else that the Mariners are trying to put together at that club. And
yeah, for me, it's got to be a distraction for the players. I mean, there's so many new players in that squad, and they're all trying to gel. And then there's some hookie that's just kind of come in and is taking up valuable match practice time, and he isn't up to standard. And that's got to rankle some people and really ruffle feathers. And you're going to have to do a good job as a coach to keep everyone on the same page while also putting this guy on the field.
Yeah, well, it's an interesting one, because you've got to wonder how that is in fact going behind the scenes, because there certainly were, there was a period there where it was a bit of a media circus. But that was a while ago now. And I think, they had that game, the trial, and, all that sort of nonsense. But actually, from what we see over here, it's died down a bit. So I do wonder whether in recent weeks it has just been regular training sessions with a guy there, and it hasn't necessarily been the distraction. Obviously it was for several weeks there, but you've got to wonder whether behind the scenes they've kind of knuckled down and gone, well, you're here at training, but you're like anyone else, and you've got to work hard on these things, because there's some work to do on some basics there. So it might be that circus period, once it was over, has actually not affected the build up too much, but we'll see.
Yeah, we will. I mean, all good if he fires, and he's a decent footballer, fantastic.
It certainly will have sold some memberships. It's heightened interest around that club. I mean, they're not a big catchment area, but it's brought some additional interest in there. So depending on how much money they're spending on this whole thing, it may prove to be a really good move for them.
Yep. Even away, the name he's got will drag people in, even if he's rubbish.
I mean, to be honest, even if he doesn't play a second of football, but were to, say, travel with the squad and sign a few autographs,
be on the bench,
it's probably good for the profile of the club.
Yep, totally agree.
Yeah, but that all comes down to a return on how much they might be spending on it. That maths might not be good.
Yeah, I still come back to the team feel. I mean, that with the A-League squad sizes the way they are, you can't afford to have ructions in the team. Just it'll derail. I mean, we saw last year with the Knicks. You get ructions in the team and everything just falls
But
apart.
I think so much of that is down to how they are managing that behind the scenes.
Totally.
It may well be that, he's not that involved, and there might be a range of things in place that are not causing that to happen. I think we should jump back to their performance, though, because you've talked about Ross McCormack, and I think the interesting thing there is not necessarily going to be how well he plays. I think it's be how good the service to him is. I think he's good enough that with good service he'll absolutely score goals, but they have at periods struggled with actually getting ball to their strikers, and if they can't sort that out, you've got some players there who should be able to do it, McGlinchey, for example, but if he's not firing, McCormack's going to be in for a long, hard season of just getting marked out of games because the service into him is not good enough.
Yeah, I think you've hit the nail on the head there, actually, mate. Yeah. To be fair, in preseason, they have been scoring goals against everybody, literally everybody except for Adelaide in the FFA Cup. They've scored a couple of sixes, a couple of threes, a four here, and then even a draw that they had with Jets was a 2-2. So the scoring the goals looks to be, if the service is good, looks to be something they can do.
Yeah, for me, it's their back four that's going to be the interesting bit.
They haven't conceded many. They did concede a lot was the three against Adelaide in the FFA Cup. But outside that, they haven't conceded many goals.
I know. It's just they do have enough quality in that front half, but it's defensive mid, because I mean, if we know that if Wemac, like you say, he's pretty much the only guy of note that will give good service through the middle. Obviously, the guy they brought back from England, who knows?
Yeah, no idea. He wasn't playing for the Burnley top side. He played maybe six appearances for them, I think. So still playing, reserve team football, but. Maybe it's one of those that you don't know whether Burnley's farming him out to get experience to bring him back, or whether they're trying to offload him. Basically.
Yeah, exactly.
Just out of interest, who's playing in goal for them? I can't remember who their keeper is.
Sorry, just go back to their squad.
I can see you have squad lists in front of you. I'm intrigued.
Turned them over. So they've got Ben Kennedy.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And Adam Pearce is the only other goalkeeper listed here.
Okay. So Kennedy's...
he's been around.
Yeah, he's experienced. I think it's a nice way of putting it. Okay, so where do we think that they're pushing for? We think they're on the cusp of six. That's my gut.
No, I don't think so.
You think seven and below.
I think it's going to take so long for the sheer number of players they have to fire, to build as a team. They were going to get, you know, wins and points here and there, but I just can't see them until later in the season actually getting enough understanding between them all to, you know, you've brought in like 15 players into your club and got rid of 15 out the other side. That's going to be tough to build any kind of cohesive first team unit.
What about you, Dave?
Yeah, I agree. I think it's going to take a while for them to be firing, just given the number of new players. But I also think with McCormick the obvious one to try and mark and kick out of the game, I think it, once they do start firing, it's very plausible other teams will have figured them out and have ways to shut them down. So I think, as you say, they'll pick up points here and there, but they might, you know, they're a team that have the potential to really struggle if they don't all fire when they need to. So I think they could be in a position, you know, if McCormick's banging in, you know, 20 a season and everything's going well, they'll comfortably make the six. But I think they're one of those ones that have every chance to start well and have the wheels fall off entirely. So I would put them in the wait and see category.
Yeah, fair enough.
Potential to make the six, yeah, but we'll see.
Okay, going to the other end of the spectrum, we get to Melbourne City. All the money, all the players, and all the expectation.
And they've been pretty busy as well. They've got a lot of players
going out. As they always do.
Players going out. So players going out, that would be of note, would be Bozanic and Bozanis. Jakobsen, Mark, we've already mentioned. Bruce Kamau's gone. Tonyuk's gone. Nick Fitzgerald's gone. I think the key one for that we would note would be Manny Muscat. Has retired from football. So he was released by Melbourne City anyway, but decided to retire and focus on his
business. I thought he was playing for Green Gully.
Yeah, but he's not playing professionally.
Yeah, okay, so, sorry.
He's going to be...
when you say retired from football, I immediately think
retired from professional football. Yep. So coming in, they've got Richie Delatt from Aston Villa. Caceres is back from, in quotes, Manchester City. Mark Brigitte, Curtis Good, Michael O'Halloran, Lachlan Wales, Weston Griffiths, so there's a few, Riley McCree, so there's a few names there. And I think the main signing, they've got someone from Sochaux in France called Florin Berenguer, but I literally know nothing about the guy. So, they got absolutely hammered in preseason by French club Girona, which is nice to see. Good to see any team with Manchester City connections getting smashed. That's quite good. But they haven't played a lot of games, to be honest.
Was that a tour they did over to Europe?
They were definitely away. They went here. So, and they played in India on the way as well. So,
okay.
Look at it. So, FA Cup, they beat Brisbane and they beat Newcastle and lost to Western Sydney. So, one of the few teams that actually played multiple A League clubs as they went along. So they've got to the round of eight, which is decent. They've got a few extra games in there, but they just don't seem to have played a lot, and it's a bit hard to gauge really where they're at, to be honest.
Similar to Mariners in that they've had a lot of people out and a lot of people back in again.
I think the key for them actually is Bruno Fornaroli.
Mm.
So he came back, he scored in his first game back, the winner, I think, in the FFA Cup against Brisbane, which was great. If he fires, we all know what he can do. I think he's got 47 goals and 64 appearances for Melbourne City since he's been there, and that's a phenomenal record. So if he gets anywhere near there, obviously only played 10 times last season because of injury, so if he gets anywhere near that kind of form again, they will be threatening the top four.
Yep. Yeah, I think that you did right. I think if Fornaroli isn't injured, we know he's good enough to cut up any side. In fact, every side.
Yep.
And that basically, for me, puts them bang in the top three without any question. I mean, as soon as you're getting any striker who's getting 20 goals in a season, you're pretty much up that top four anyway. But, if Fornaroli isn't banging in 20, it does feel a bit Mariners-y to me. And that they've got so many players that are just new. And, you know, they're certainly looking at their form in the FFA Cup. I mean, I don't think the Wanderers look all that great. And they, you know, Wanderers turned them over.
Yeah.
And that was the last game, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the thing for me is you look at the list of outs, and while there's a lot of players out, it's not really the spine of their team. It's not the big name performers. It's some guys who certainly contributed throughout the season, but unlike the Mariners, who it feels like they've basically turned over the whole starting 11, there's a solid spine that remains here for Melbourne City. They've turned over some of their fringe players and the squaddies and bought in similar level squaddies, and then a couple of biggish name changes. You know, the imports, we don't know much about them, but let's assume they've done their homework. They certainly have the scouting network to know what they're talking about. So I think the difference here from the Mariners for me is that this doesn't feel like they turned over the starting 11. There's some depth here that's changed for sure, and that we might see that play out over, you know, what can end up being a reasonably long season with such a small squad. But I think they're much more likely here to hit the ground running, because that spine and that core and so many of the players and staff and whatever is completely consistent here.
Like us, though, they haven't reached the minimum yet. They haven't reached the minimum squad size. They've only got 19 players there, so they do have to sign at least one more person before the, I think, we did
just one, that'd
find
be
out.
Nice, wouldn't it?
Yeah,
it
would
be. But is that a visa spot that they've got open? Do you know?
Hold, please, caller.
Because, I mean, that for me is the difference, as much as with their network, they've got the, you know, if they've got the available spot.
So I don't actually know who their visa spots are, because they will have at least one player who is a dual citizen, but under a different nationality. So looking at their squad, they've got six internationals listed, but they can't all obviously be international players. Yeah. So they'll have dual citizenship somewhere along the line and be considered Australian. So
So
I don't know. I genuinely don't know.
Okay. So that's the interesting one for me, is that with their with their scouting network, they're liable to sign someone who's pretty decent, even though it's last minute. But yeah, they do feel like a top three side to me.
Yeah, I totally agree. Yep. I think top three, top four, dependent on Fornaroli. And if he's not firing, then I think
he's struggle,
but it should still be top six.
But even if Fornaroli's not firing, we've seen that Vidicic can step up and get you goals and assists. Yep.
There's definitely depth in that squad. There's depth and talent in that squad.
Yeah, I think they'll be very disappointed not to be top four. Yeah. I think that's the expectation for sure. If they were to drop out of the six, this would be a big surprise.
I think their expectation, or certainly their goal, will be top two, not top
correct.
Four.
Yeah.
Who's their keeper this year? Do we know? Do you know?
So they've signed Mark Brigitte, obviously.
Right.
But he was unattached. And Eugene Galikovic is the backup. So.
Yeah. So Birgitti, he's okay, but he's not what you consider on par with most of the rest of their squad, I would have thought.
Well, they're coming off Thomas Sorensen, aren't they?
Yeah.
Who was a good keeper. A massive step down when you come off a keeper of that kind of quality anyway.
I think they've probably realised what many teams have, that you can get away with not a great keeper in the A-League. You know, you can't get away with an absolute shocker, but keepers is not where you need to be bringing in the big names. And I think that they know that. They've gone with two serviceable Australian keepers that won't be breaking the bank.
Both A-League quality.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, definitely.
And upper end of A-League quality, to be honest.
Yep.
Yeah. Which is fine in this league. I mean, you can win the league with that comfortably.
Yeah.
You don't all need to have Danny Vukovic.
So speaking of upper A-League quality, we come on to the victory. Yes, service as usual almost for the victory.
There's a lot to note about the victory and coming into the season, actually. I think what we should start with is Bishop Risha leaving.
Mm-hmm.
So he's gone to Sanpachi Hiroshima, and it's not just for victory, it's a massive loss for the league, obviously, because of the all-time leading goal scorer and the qualities that he brings.
And a massive shark cod, which is always of interest.
Well, on the field. We don't know him off the field. So
Totally. But that brought some personality to the league.
It kind of did. I think he's going to be massively missed. Obviously, they'll miss his goals, but I think he'll be missed in the league in general as well, because those kind of personalities do make a difference. Their signings in, they've got several very, very good signings in. Looking at the smaller ones, Corey Brown's gone there. Storm Roo has gone there as well. The bigger name signings, we would look at Ola Toivonen, who is a current Swedish international, scored against...
Starting 11?
Yep, scored against Germany at the World Cup. That's just completed. So obviously a decent quality player. Although I think he's now retired from international football after that tournament, which is probably why he's taking a contract somewhere in a different part of the world to try something a bit new and different. If he was wanting to be with the national side, I'm pretty sure he'd have stayed over in Europe somewhere. George Niedermeyer, who's come from the Bundesliga. He made 148 appearances for Stuttgart. He's been out of favour at Freiburg since 16-17. Bundesliga level player, and was at a Bundesliga level club. So
he is solid. I've seen him play. He doesn't fuck around.
Yeah. And obviously the big one was Keisuke Honda. He's an enormous signing. his pedigree is phenomenal when you look where he's actually played, and the fact that he's only 32 is he could be an enormous difference for the victory.
So basically we've got one exceptionally experienced German and two basically current World Cup starting 11 players.
Yep. Coming in.
In.
Yes, that's coming in. So when you lose players, you know, like you look at who's going out, and the only real one to note, I guess, is probably Mitch Austin, other than Borussia. But, they've lost some players, but it all looks like the dross from the squad, to be fair. Yeah, except for Borussia.
You've opened with losing Borussia is going to be a big loss, and then you look at who they've brought in and you go, no, you've upgraded. Absolutely.
They've upgraded the squad. I don't think Borussia sits comfortably in this league with those players.
Yeah.
But they have definitely upgraded the rest of the squad.
Yeah. I think anything you've lost with him, to be honest, you've largely replaced.
Yeah.
So I don't think you're going to be too worried about the loss of him. I think you've upgraded the squad more than enough. So I think for them, they already were a very good side. They're now even better. I think it'd be hard to look past them as kind of paper favourites.
That paper is pretty thick, though.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Even
so, it's one of those ones. You know, we'll see how it goes, but. There's not much you can fault there. They're going to have a good season, and if they don't, that'll be entirely on outside factors rather than recruitment.
For me, it's if they don't finish with the Premier's plate and basically win the final, I think Mr. Muscat's going to be having to have a long, hard look in the mirror if he can see himself in the mirror, because you know the undead.
Yeah. And because you keep asking, Matt Acton and Lawrence Thomas.
Okay.
Keepers.
Lawrence Thomas, he's decent. I rate him, actually. He can throw the odd one in, but this is the A-League.
Yeah.
So, okay, that you guys feel they're basically all, that's your number one?
I'd be comfortable putting them as favourites for the season.
Yeah, okay. That's not too bad. So from there we go to the surprise package for last year, the Jets.
Yeah, so they haven't been overly busy. No one going out that you'd be concerned about, really. Coming in, though, a couple of interesting signings. So they have grabbed Mitch Austin from the Victory. They've grabbed Matt Redenton from us, which I was quite sad about.
Yeah.
But good on Matt for going and...
Much of their recruitment's from us, really, isn't it?
It is. And but the surprise for me was Lewis Italiano. So they signed Lewis Italiano as back up to Glenn Moss, the keeper.
It's a position he knows well.
Yeah, their keeper's gone overseas.
Obviously, he has the same butt size as Mossy, and they're just kind of making a nice little groove in the bench.
It was Jack Duncan, wasn't it? Jack Duncan was their keeper last season. So he's been signed by a club I can't pronounce over in the Middle East. So... good luck to him. Hope he does really well. So Mossy will be their number one. And they signed Lewis again. So I do find it odd that Lewis has gone there to be number two again. Obviously, he works well with Mossy. That's possibly why Ernie's gone that route.
For me, he hasn't shown enough to get himself a number one spot. That's all there is to it.
Oh, we all agreed. You know, we thought he'd go back and play NPL level.
Yeah.
He'd signed for the Stirling Lions and had been playing for them when he got the call up to go and be a trial for the Jets. So I do find it he's young but probably wants to play, but he's got a long time to play at NPL level.
Yeah.
You don't have that long to play at fully professional level.
It's something I hadn't thought about until just now, so I'm going to biff out my current thought on it. Maybe it's a matter of him knowing the player that Mossy is and thinking that's a good shot for him to come number one. He knows Mossy's style, he knows his weaknesses, and he thinks this is the season that I can overtake him and nick a number one spot.
Because
he's been behind Mossy for a while. He knows the areas of the game he needs to improve, and he knows Mossy's game well. So at least you're up against, you know, you're trying to steal, but get the number one spot off a player you know very well. That's got to be a bit easier than coming into a new setup as the number two and not knowing where you stand. You know this coach, you know the number one in front of you. That's probably your best chance to get a shot at it, right?
And you know Mossy does get the odd injury as well.
Absolutely. And, you know, I love Mossy, but you'd have to say he's not that far away from potentially starting a bit of a decline. You know, it could be this season, it could be 2 or 3 years away, but he's in that range where you might expect that to happen and you might expect a few more injuries, and Lewis has set himself up behind a spot he knows well.
You get the impression with Lewis he's also a confidence player. So his confidence would have taken a shot last season, where he was, you know, obviously dropped below
an 18-year-old nobody.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't think that was particularly well handled by the coaches here at that point in time. So if he gets his confidence up, he does well. If you look at the end of the previous season, with his confidence up, doing well, he had some great games and made some fantastic saves and earned us some points. So it's perhaps it's the way he was treated by those coaches that
would have been tough on a personal level, having what he must know through his coaching, the weaknesses in his game so clearly highlighted. You know, it was the kid was put ahead of him because he could do the things that Lewis needs to improve. You know, it was his kicking, it was, you know, just some of that pressure stuff that Lewis has not been good at. To have that so clearly spotlighted and so publicly, rather than, you know, your one-on-one coaching and going, hey, you need to work on some of this, it was here it is all out there in front of everyone. That must have been a bit of a personal hit that can't be easy to get over.
Everyone
have weaknesses in their games, but shining such a gigantic floodlight on the whole situation has to hurt.
Yeah, I agreed.
Right, so where do we think Newcastle are going to sit? I mean, for me, their top four, Ernie got them pretty firing last time.
See, I'm a bit more iffy about them. I don't think their recruitment has been as strong as other clubs.
Yeah.
Last season, I think, was a bit of an anomaly. They played well, don't get me wrong. Ernie changed his style to suit the people that he had, rather than trying to fit them into a system that he likes to work with. And it worked. It worked from last season. Will he do that again? Hard to know. He's got the recruitment in this season. Last season, he effectively took over a club that was already built. Yep. So it's hard. It's hard for me to know. I don't think they're going to sit top two. I don't think they're going to sit top four. But I certainly think they'll be top six.
Yeah, I've got them sneaking into my six. Mm. I think they're going to be solid. I think they're going to have some good games. But I think last year was a bit of a perfect storm for them. They caught everyone by surprise. I don't think they get that luxury this time around. And I think some of those teams at the very top have moved a long way forward. They're not in that league. So I don't see them top two. I don't see them top four. But I do see them sneaking into the six here.
Yeah, for me, I had them pegged around either the four, if everything goes well, or five.
Yeah. Yeah, but I think they're definitely a side that if some of these other teams, you know, if we're looking at Adelaide, City, et cetera, not performing to expectations, and Newcastle do, sure, they could sneak into a four.
Yep.
But, yeah, they need a lot of things to go their way.
Okay, speaking of aiming for the four, we come to Perth. A lot of ins obviously outs.
They've done an impressive squad redevelopment, is how I will refer to it.
Especially with a limited budget, as we have in the A-League.
Do you know what? They've done well. They bought Tony P in as their CEO.
Yeah.
They got Popper back from his poor showing in Turkey. Was it 3 wins in 9 games in a very short tenure and getting fired? And come back in, and he's a proven quality coach at this level of football. And the signings they have made are fantastic. They got Akamamidis back from Lazio. They got Franjic from the Roar. They got Fabio Ferreira from Sydney. Brendan Santalab from Western Sydney. And I'm really surprised. I thought he'd end his career there, but surprised to him go. Matt Sparanovic has come in. Tando Vilafi, Jason Davidson. And the two names I don't know are one day who's coming from Spezia and in Italy, and Tomislav Mrchela, who was unattached. I don't know either of those two names. I'm guessing they're probably both going to be their imports at this stage. That is a hell of a squad build to go on top of what quality they already had, because obviously they've got
Keo and
exactly, they've got an amazing squad already.
And the Spaniard
Diego Castro. Yeah. So I can see them very, very much fighting it out for the top of the league.
For me, it's the whole travel that screws them. That's why I think they've done really good business, and I think that it's amazing the players they've got with the experience they've got, and to get them all under the salary cap, because I'm pretty sure they don't have a marquee officially. So I think that needs to be remarked on, that that's obviously some wonderful negotiation going on.
Tony Sage has certainly opened his checkbook, hasn't he, to get these players, that's for sure.
Yeah. But for me, it's
they're all under salary caps, covered under the TV deal.
Did not say they weren't.
Well, so he hasn't opened his checkbook at all then.
Yeah.
I think it's fairly.
I refuse to comment on this on the grounds that
the
it may incriminate
does
me.
Not want to be thrown under, and no, I stitched him up.
Yeah, that's
well played.
Well done, sir. You have played that well.
Sorry, you're saying how he's paying for it out of his own pocket.
He's definitely.
How's he doing?
Definitely,
there?
He's. I guarantee that a couple of these guys will be made marquees
eventually.
Well, they don't have to be named marquees yet, do they?
Well, no, they also don't. They, I mean, let's face it, the Sydney model has paid them in 2 years or 3 years.
There's lots of ways they can do it. Backloaded contracts is a thing that happens quite often. Yeah.
Okay, so for me, the only reason these guys don't finish top two is the travel's going to nail them. They still seem to struggle with travel. Even, you know, I don't think Popovich is going to change that. You know, they get screwed by it more than we do.
Yeah, I think it's a challenge he's not used to dealing with either. I think he probably, similar to when Ernie came here and thought he understood what that meant and quickly realised he kind of didn't realise the extra hassle with that. The one benefit they have is a lot of their travel is not international, so they don't have the 2 hours at airports and customs and all that shit, which we have to deal with, which, I mean, it's six of one, half a dozen the other as to which is worse, but...
I would much rather sit in a comfortable lounge and sit on an uncomfortable plane.
Yeah. But, you know, once you're off the plane, it's a lot of, like, customs is milling around for an hour. Yeah, you know, there's challenges both ways. But so I think he probably thinks he can deal with that, but isn't quite aware what it's going to be like until it's actually go time.
Yeah, totally.
So that'll be an interesting challenge for him to try and manage his way through. But he's got a lot of personnel here. He knows well. He's you know, you're talking about people finishing out their career at West Sydney. The one guy they'd move for is Popper, and he's the guy who they've moved for. He knows these guys. They know him. It's...
So who did he get from Sydney?
Centre.
Oh, but there's Economidis was there when he was there, wasn't he?
I think so, yeah. But he's come back from Lazio to play for Perth, so that says a lot too.
Yeah.
And was Jack Duncan there at some point as well?
No, he was at Newcastle.
Okay.
He's on from, he went overseas from Newcastle.
Okay. And Falafi's going to be their number one?
No, they got Liam Reddy. So it's true, likely Liam Reddy will play as number one.
Wow.
Yeah.
And Falafi's gone to be the number two.
I'd say he's gone to fight for number one, but
he's not getting the number one.
He was in Japan and not playing there, so he's come back where it's more of an opportunity for him to gain a number one spot. Yeah. He showed when he was over here that he's actually a keeper.
He's certainly come a long way since his early days.
Yeah, and he'd have played all those games for us towards the end of the season if he hadn't got injured.
Yeah. So, obviously, Dave, you are kind of on a par with me that it's not top two, but it's in the mix for the four.
Yeah, I've got them solidly in my four.
Yeah,
I think they're. If it weren't for how far the victory, for example, have come, I think they would be. You would consider them. You know, if you go A-League 2 or 3 years ago, you'd be considering them a favourite potentially. This season, they're solidly at the top there.
Cam?
I totally agree. Yeah, I have them as one of my top three.
Yeah, it's one of those things that just you can't go past the squad depth that they've got and the quality.
Popper. Is it? Squad depth and Popper.
Yep.
Yeah.
So speaking of basically the Socceroos job, we go to where the Socceroos coach has come from, Sydney.
Obviously, that is a massive change for them.
It is. However, Corica is an old school Sydney boy. He knows that club really well. So if anyone can come in fresh, it's got to be Steve Corica.
Yep. Good succession planning, basically, from them to have Corica step up and take over. That makes perfect sense. He knows how Arnie's been doing it, and I think he's going to keep going along the same kind of lines. They have lost some good players, though.
Yeah.
They've lost a lot of good talent. So Bobo's gone. He was 20-plus goals. Majewski's gone. He's worth 20-plus goals with his assists as well. Matt Simon's gone. It was Ben Cheney. Carney's gone as well. You'll be glad to hear. But Luke Wilkshire's gone. Jordy Boas is gone. Fabio Ferreira's gone. It's a massive.
That's a lot out of their starting 11, isn't it?
Massive clean out. And when you look at what's coming in, Daniel De Silva's still back on loan from Central Coast.
Is he still on loan?
Still on loan, yeah.
Like they haven't bought the contract That's the weirdest arrangement.
Yeah. But they have made some other good signings. So Sam de Jong from Ajax Amsterdam, Jop van der Linden from AZ Alkmaar, and the one that I know, Adam Lafondra, coming from the UK. So he played EPL for Reading in which season was it? 2012-13, scored 12 goals and 34 matches for them. So you have to have some talent. He's very much a championship level player. He plays played a lot of his football in the Championship. He's only played that one season in the EPL. Overall, he's got 169 goals in 464 matches in his professional
career. So he's pretty consistent, one and three.
I think when you look at the goals, how many goals that like Bobo scored and Majewski set up and scored, I don't know whether they're going to get all those goals back. But if De Jong and Van der Linden fire and Lafondre fire, then it could they could easily cover that. It's one of those that I'm just not sure on, though. Obviously, they're quality footballers. I'm just not sure.
Yeah. So very much a wait and see kind of could be top two, could be five.
Yeah, and it's quite – just because it's such a massive amount of change for them, losing their coach, losing their – like two of their absolute key players plus a few other starters and bringing in some quality footballers but all under a new coach who's got
– I think the other big change you're not noting there is Tony P as well. I think he's probably a big factor in some of those players leaving. The amount of financial management that he does at a club, like when he came in at Sydney, they were actually running at a loss, if I remember correctly, and he turned them around to be, you know, just an absolute financial powerhouse. And he was bringing in these players, and I think he's probably a big factor in some of those names they've lost. So not only have you lost the coach who was, you know, amazing, but you've lost a CEO who was keeping the back office and all of that running to the top level as well. I think that's a hell of a lot of change for the whole club. You know, it's a change for the on-field staff, but the back office as well. And I think it'll be interesting to see both those effects. It's clearly had some effect on recruitment, I would say, in terms of who you've lost there. Mm. I think if Tony P's still there, I think you're probably keeping guys like Bobo, I think.
Yeah,
you know, and so it'll be interesting to see the effect of all of that on the club, because the recruitment hasn't gone badly. You know, they brought in some names, for sure, but whether they can get it all to come together like Arnie seems to have been able to in the past and, you know, all of that, we'll see.
The key is they've still made the FFA Cup final.
Yep.
And they've only played Western Sydney is the only A-League team they've played there, but they beat them 3-0, which is pretty comfortable.
Yeah, and so I think the thing is they're still Sydney. I mean, you know, they're still going to be a good side, but are they the romping to victory Sydney that we've seen?
Are they going to want to buy 14 points again? Probably not.
Yeah,
if they win it, it's going to be a tough fight.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. They're now in for a battle, and we'll see how it goes. And I don't have them winning the battle.
No, neither do I.
No, same. For me, I haven't even considered the Tony Piniata thing, but it's certainly I had them either at finishing second or finishing fifth and not between. It's like it's either going to go well and they're really going to get up there but still not get to victory, or it's not going to go so well but they've got enough class to keep them well in the six.
Yeah. But I mean, it'll be interesting. So I would say there's been some immediate impact from Tony P leaving in terms of how that player negotiation stuff's gone, but it'll be interesting to see how that goes longer term in terms of sponsorship arrangements and stuff, you know, whether the new CEO they've got can keep that ticking over the same way that they have previously, whether they will still be the financial powerhouse 2 or 3 years from now that they have been, or whether they might be sliding back towards some of the woes they had before Tony P came in.
Yeah.
You know, you'd hope whoever it is can keep it together, but Tony P clearly does a good job wherever he goes, because you look at the immediate impact at Perth.
Speaking of woes, we get to Western Sydney Wanderers. They've had a bit of a mixed start, to be fair to say, Cam.
Yeah, they've lost. They lost the Mariners. They got hammered by the Jets. They've got a preseason this weekend, I think, against Melbourne City as well. So, but they also
made the
semis of the FFA Cup, where they lost to Sydney. So, but again, there was a couple of NPL teams, Bonnyrigg and Hellenic Athletic, and then beat Melbourne City. So
Hellenic was the ones from Tasmania. Was it Cairns?
Yeah,
and they were scratchy. They had the 54-year-old or something playing for them.
Yes, and he scored or something like that. Yeah, I watched bits and pieces.
It was scratchy game.
It really, really was. But I think the key for these guys, they've had a lot of movement. But the key is they brought in former Liverpool, Bayern Munich and Der Mannschaft player Marcus Babbel as their manager. And he's got a really decent record. He's managed for 258 matches over four different clubs with a 43% win rate. So that's pretty decent. He's only had one club where he's struggled. Every other club he's been decent.
It was his last club, though.
No, second to last club. Yep. So
Perth?
Yep. I don't remember what they were called. I didn't actually write it down, but he's
yeah. I remember
his last club was in Switzerland, and he was I think it might have been like Luzern or something like that, and he was done really well there.
Yeah, I was pretty sure there was he was one of these guys that I remember from Bundesliga chats that he had big raps on him, obviously with his pedigree, and kind of burst onto the scene as coaching the coaching scene quite rapidly, and everyone was thinking he was going to be the next big thing, but he never quite stepped up, and if anything, just kind of tailed off. And that's why
Anthony Hudson-esque.
No, he actually did okay at the Bundesliga, but then dropped to the second tier, and then it was just never really kicked on, and ended up floating out to Switzerland. Yeah,
they have signed some well known A League names in Nick Fitzgerald and Bruce Kamau and Tonjic and Tarek Elrich, so they have these have some quality back into the squad. They've signed Patrick Ziegler from Kaiserslautern, which is a decent signing. Going out the other side, as we've already mentioned, Brendan Santlab, Michael Thwaite's gone back. I think he's retired from professional football, and he's now playing back in the Gold Coast. Jack Clisbury's gone to Mariners. I think everybody's gone to Mariners, to be honest. But Steve Lustica's gone as well overseas. So, yeah, there's a lot of movement there. I think it's going to come – how they perform in the season is going to come down to Babel and the tactics he gets across, and whether he can get them across and whether they can put him out on the field. If they do that, they could be quite successful, because he has been successful everywhere he's gone bar one place.
Yeah.
So it's going to be an interesting call.
For me, he doesn't have the horsepower. Kamau is a good signing. I think that he's a guy that could potentially lead an attack, because you've got to remember that they've lost Santa, who wasn't their starting striker, but he was a guaranteed double-figure goals, really. And especially as an impact player, for me, that almost counts double.
If he's able to bring him on for 10 minutes and basically be guaranteed a goal.
Yeah, I mean, that was fantastic for them. So I think that they've lost a lot of that strike power, and I don't know where they're going to get the goals from. I mean, we know that Rowley, as much as he might sit in as a box to box, he doesn't give you more than three or four tops. So it's a lot of pressure on Kamau.
It's good. They're an interesting one as well. I think again, if they fire, they could fire well, but it's hard to know how they're going to fire.
Yeah, for me, it just feels like the Wanderers. They have, while everyone else has stepped up, they have lost a step. I talked about Adelaide at the beginning, as being as a net zero. These guys feel like it's a net negative. They've stepped away from Adelaide, where they were kind of tussling in with them before. It feels like now they've dropped away, and there's now almost, for me, three tiers of teams.
Should we do our predictions then for the season?
No.
I think we've almost basically said it's going to be victory first.
Yeah. Well, you go. You tell us your 10, your table 10.
I've just grouped mine it's into four, really. I've got victory just and a gap.
Yep.
And then your next, you've got basically Sydney, Perth and City. Mm-hmm. And then it's a shit fight, basically Adelaide, Brisbane and Jets.
How about we do top one, which we all agree on, so we can ignore that.
Yeah, but everyone's
a top
got
four, a top six, and then the ones who don't make the six.
Okay,
top four is so we've gone victory, I think Perth, Sydney, and City. So that's your four.
I agree with the teams. So I've got Sydney second and Perth third.
I'm not.
Same teams here.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah. Your next two are Jets and Adelaide.
Stop reading off my list, bro.
It's exactly the same.
I have Newcastle and Adelaide as my two to make the six.
Adelaide fifth and Newcastle sixth. Yeah,
nice.
And then, I have them the other way around. Yep.
And then I think we have...
it leaves you Mariners, next,
Brisbane.
Wanderers,
I think...
Who's last out of them?
Mariners.
Interesting. I've got Brisbane.
Yeah, interesting. I've got them ninth. Yeah.
Yeah, I've. Oh.
I give the Mariners more credit. I've got them only just missing out.
I think they lose credit for trialing Bolt.
I haven't factored that in. I think they've got a decent squad there that could
put
some surprises,
they could,
which is why I've got them seventh. I've got them missing out.
I either have them tenth or seventh. It's just like there's nothing in between.
I have them tenth because I think it's going to take them time to build a team with the squad that they put together, not because the talent isn't there to produce something.
Yeah.
Where have we got us, boys?
I have us ninth.
I've got us eighth as well.
Yeah. I've got us ahead of Brisbane and Mariners. Yeah, and I've got Wanderers just missing the six.
Yeah.
See, I've got us ahead of Brisbane and Wanderers, and I've got Mariners just beating us out.
Yeah.
Yeah, Brisbane are, for me, the unknown. I think that they could be reasonably consistent. But that's about it.
That potential for sure. I mean, I've put them dead last there. They'll probably beat Melbourne.
Yeah. So, grand final winner, we all agree, is going to be victory, basically. They're going to run away with everything all season.
Yeah.
Yep. Who's going to be the golden boot for the league?
Someone else want to lead off?
Fornaroli.
Oh, yeah. Fuck. Okay, how did I miss him? It can't be anyone else, can it?
Oh, I think there could easily be a lot of other players.
Yeah.
You could have Toivonen might really suit the way they play.
No, Toivonen is not a 20-goal guy.
He might be in the A-League as
no,
the key.
No, he's not.
Costin may have a breakout season. You might have
Keogh,
because of all the guys they've signed in Perth, Keogh might have the service he's been dreaming of all his career. He might score 50 goals a season. You just don't know.
I'm going McCormick.
Yeah, that's a fair call.
I think primarily, not because necessarily they do well, but he gets their goals.
Yeah, he's the only one.
He's the one getting them.
Yeah, that's for me why Keogh doesn't, is because they're going to start pinching his goals.
Potentially, yeah.
Yep.
I think Fornaroli potentially has that problem as well. There's a lot of guys there who can score those goals. This is why the victory are not making the mix. There's too many guys there who I think are going to spread their goals around.
I think City are going to be heavily reliant on Fornaroli's goals. Yeah, this season,
I think that's true.
Yeah,
but they've got some other options, whereas I'm not convinced there's anyone around McCormick who's getting more than one or two.
I think Perth is the team that are going to score six a game. When they score, they'll score lots, and Keogh's going to get hatfuls. Yeah. He might not score every game, but I still think he'll score a
lot. I don't know
if
they are, because it's like when they had Castro running the show, getting all the ball, they look pretty sharp, but he's not going to get that now.
Who's our golden boot?
Krishna.
Yeah.
I just wanted to be controversial and say Nichols.
Yeah, that's an interesting call, mate. Yeah. Yep. From box to box.
He's going
to
be starting.
Mate, he scores a lot of goals.
For box to box, he does. Yep. But I think he's scoring at most 10.
Yep.
And we're going to have another shit season if our box to box guy.
We haven't exactly shown that we're going to bag in many, and I suspect Burns, Williams, Krishna, Singh might all end up sharing quite a few.
Yeah.
And let's just for shits and giggles say Nichols somehow pips them.
Yeah.
He
scores 5.
They all finish on 8 and 9. You know?
Yep, cool. I'll take that though, because that means we're going to score over 40 goals this season. We haven't done that for a while. Who's going to be our player of the year?
I think if you talk contribution to the club as opposed to contribution on the field, it's Taylor already.
It depends on your criteria. If this is on a 3-2-1, I think there's another couple of contenders. I think Singh might be in the mix. I would love to see him have the season we know he could have, where he could be in with 1 or 2 points every game. I don't think he's going to be a 3-point every game player, but I think he'll have solid
one or two
contributions throughout the season, and I think that could be enough for us. I think Taylor's obviously in a position similar to that.
I think Taylor's got it. I think he is going to be, if we make the playoffs, it will be purely down to how he is leading our back line.
And the other player or players I'd throw in the mix is if we actually get into some goal scoring form, whoever it is scoring them is going to pick up a bunch of threes. You know, Krishna has a blinder of a season, or Burns, if one of them, you know, hits their straps, they will be well in the mix of that, because, you know, you bag a hat trick, it's 3 points.
Yeah, for me, it's if it's on the field, it's not Taylor. I don't think he's going to give you – he's not going to be an outstanding player. I think it's going to be whoever scores the goals, and it's basically going to be Krishna, I think.
Which is rubbish, because I hate the fact that people judge it. And let's be honest, Rudan is a defender, so he will recognise a good
quality. Is that who does the points?
It depends on how we're awarding this.
Yeah.
So if we're talking about the Phoenix Player of the Year, that has traditionally been done by coaching staff.
Yes.
But in terms of the Johnny Warren, it's done by commentators and
So I'm looking at the guy that's going to get the Globe at the end of season awards.
Yeah.
And to me, that's going to be Stephen Taylor.
Yeah. 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 That's fair. I think that he's going to.
Your points are entirely valid, Dave.
Yep.
I just think Stephen Taylor's got it.
I think it's tough to give 3 points, for example, to a central defender when we haven't kept a clean sheet. And I'm not convinced we're going to keep that many. So you're again relying on him to have a similar level of picking up ones and twos consistently, which he may well do, but I think there's other contenders in that mix as well.
Someone like Krishna is
winning it on a few good games.
Durant and Moss have all picked up that award.
Yep.
For very poor seasons by a club standard.
Yep. Yep.
So I think if you are Mark Rodan and you can recognise a quality performance from a defender, even in a loss, I think he'll still do it.
I don't disagree at all, but that'll be how he's doing it, is in ones and twos. He's not going to be he's not going to be coming out and beating everyone by a lot of points.
No, I think he'll get 50 to 60 of those points by the end of the season, and it's probably going to be enough, unless one of those guys scores a truckload of goals or gets a truckload of assists. Any other categories you want to have a go at? That's all I could think of. No?
No.
What do we think it takes for us to make the six? What needs to happen here for us to make the six?
Yeah, we need a quality, absolute quality signing in the spine of our team. One more.
In the next three or four days.
And
that is going to bring either assists or goals.
Yep. I totally agree, and I also think that we need, even if we sign one, we do need to a fair bit of luck with injuries. We don't have the depth that a lot of other clubs do.
Totally agree. I think depending on the guys that we've still got to come in, we can have a quality starting 11 that can be competitive in the league. Yeah. I think where we may fall down will be when those injuries hit, or when we have to sub lower than our next three guys. So we might have, in the end, 14 good players, but I think we have to have a really good squad, and I think we'll struggle there. So you get us a great spine player, we're good.
Can I just ring a note of hope in there that we haven't touched on the fact that there's international windows, and we're no longer going to get shafted three games a year or four games a year where we're having to field the kids and basically throw away nine, 12 points.
I'm comfortable with that. I think that's really, really good. It also gives a lot of those injured guys a little bit more time to recover when those injuries come out. And those guys who are tired in the legs, like Andrew Durante will be, just a little bit of extra, time lying on the couch that he probably needs at 35. So
on that wee note of hope, how about we wrap it up here, gents? So thanks for listening to this very, very long pod, but we're sure that, well, we enjoyed it.
2 hours, good. I didn't realise we've been talking that long. It's gone well. Pat, feel free to edit that into two.
So good night from Dave and Cam, and good night from me. Good night.
Minute pods bring you
one brief flicker of hope brings you
giving Patrick a hell of an editing job brings you
jinxing Melbourne victory brings you 5 minutes per team brings you
we tried 5 minutes, we lasted Adelaide, Brisbane and City with 5 minutes
per team. Were they good? And you're tiny at that point,
and then after City it really derailed.
Calling Muscat it? The undead brings you soundcheck time. Woo!
Oh, hello.
Woo! Woo!
Turn me up.
Yep, cool.
Ticket.
Yep.